And the recording has restarted. We are back at 10:25 a.m. And we will do a roll call, make sure everybody is present. Dr. Cornwall?
Here.
Dr. King?
Present.
Dr. Bustillo?
Here.
Mr. Leone?
Here.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Here.
Okay, Ms. Cardoza?
Present.
Ms. Crowley?
Here.
Ms. Richardson?
Present.
Okay, we're all here. Dr. Cornwall, the meeting is yours.
Okay, so this is case 21-08, Sean Flanagan. He's requested a rehearing. And so I have a script that I will go through, all right? this is the date, time, and place for the board to consider Sean Flanagan's request for rehearing or review following the informal hearing that was held on this matter on August 24th, 2021. And Mr. Flanagan, you, and I think you have an attorney, if you would, the both of you would please introduce yourself for the record.
Sean Flanagan.
And Scott King on behalf of Dr. Flanagan.
Okay, thank you. the board's legal advisor in this matter is Assistant Attorney General Mark Harris. Under AAC R424308D, the board may grant a rehearing of the case in part or in whole, or review the decision if Mr. Flanagan establishes that one or more of the grounds listed in the rules materially affected his rights during the administrative hearing. If the board grants his request for a rehearing, it will conduct the rehearing at a later date. If the board grants his request for review, it may conduct the review at this meeting or schedule further proceedings. If the board denies his request for rehearing or review, he will receive a written order setting forth his rights of appeal. The board has reviewed Mr. Flanagan's motion for rehearing or review. Mr. Flanagan and his attorney will have approximately 5 minutes to address the board on this matter. This is the time for legal argument related to the grounds for rehearing or review, and neither Mr. Flanagan nor his attorney should use this time to present new evidence or testimony to the board regarding the merits of the case. If they claim there is newly discovered material evidence, they are asked to identify each piece of evidence and why it could not have been presented at the informal hearing. Once Mr. Flanagan or his attorney has finished making their arguments, the board members will have an opportunity to ask Mr. Flanagan questions. We will now proceed to those oral arguments and presentations.
Thank you, Mr. President and members of the board. We respectfully ask the board to grant this motion for rehearing or review pursuant to the Administrative Code R424308A. And D on numbers 1 through 7. In the finding of fact number 10, the board states that the respondent did not obtain KR's consent and made inappropriate skin-to-skin contact with KR's buttock region at her third visit. The respondent documented in his progress note that he obtained verbal consent for all the interventions. And he also, at the initial office visit on February 25th, 2021, had the patient sign a consent to treat an important policies form, and which basically states that KR consents and authorizes one accord physical therapy to provide physical therapy services that may be considered appropriate upon the professional judgment of my treating therapist. And it also states that I understand that I have the right to ask and have any questions answered prior to, during, or after treatment. This includes risks, benefits, alternatives, and purposes of treatment. So contrary to finding of fact number 10, the respondent did obtained written consent prior to any treatment, as well as verbal consent at each office visit. Regarding the inappropriate touching allegation, Dr. Flanagan testified that he did not touch the patient's buttock region. There was no skin-to-skin contact. And we also believe that based upon the testimony and statements given to the police, KR's statements regarding this incident are inconsistent. On March 11th, this last year, KR told Officer Carner that the respondent had massaged her hips and buttocks with his right hand for 10 minutes at the third office visit. At the informal interview, August 24th, she said in pertinent part, he did put his hands, not one hand, but hands, under my pants and rubbed at the girdle area without telling me that he was going to do that, and he sort of made me feel uncomfortable. On March 16th of last year, KR told Officer Parker that respondent put his hands under her skin-tight leggings, and that then KR then remembered that while Dr. Flanagan was massaging her, he was grinding against the massage table. KR said she felt uncomfortable at this point. In her testimony, KR stated that at this third office visit, she decided to give the respondent the benefit of the doubt that in return for the fourth office visit, we respectfully submit that there's no benefit of the doubt here. It exists if the respondent allegedly massaged KR's hips and buttocks for 10 minutes while grinding his body against the table. Even if a respondent or KR, excuse me, believes that massaging her hips and buttocks were part of the therapy, no reasonable person, let alone a surgery manager such as KR, would conclude that a physical therapist grinding his body against the table while stroking the patient's hips and buttocks for 10 minutes was appropriate and just part of the treatment. A physical therapist grinding his body against a table while massaging the patient's hips and buttocks is an overt sexual act and cannot possibly be construed as part of treatment by any reasonable person. Consequently, we respectfully submit that there's insufficient evidence that respondent touched patient's buttocks and that the response or that KR's statements regarding this are not credible, and there's insufficient evidence to show that the respondent touched KR's buttocks, and therefore there's no ethical violation regarding this. Going back a minute for the consent, because the finding of fact is clearly wrong regarding this issue, we respectfully submit that that's one of the basis for providing a hearing or review. As stated in the informal hearing, respondent was not charged with R-424-301-D, which talks about obtaining consent. However, during the hearing, Dr. Cornwall indicated that that could not be brought up during the hearing because he was not charged with that specific administrative code. However, Ms. Onihu then said, well, it could be put under the catch-all, I'll call it, Statute 32-2044-4 regarding substandard care. And we respectfully submit that because, number one, there was a signed consent, and number two, it wasn't noticed prior to the board meeting that deprived our respondent of a fair hearing regarding the consent issue. And that's one of the basis, again, for requesting this hearing. Respondent an appropriate assessment at the initial offices on February 25th. And our standard of care expert, associate professor at NAU, indicated that the respondent met the standard of care, and it was logical that the respondent focused on the lower extremities as opposed to the upper extremities, because the primary goal with a GBS patient is to reduce her fatigue and increase her stamina and endurance. And that's what the therapy that respondent prescribed did. It increased her strength and endurance. Respondent intended to see this patient for 8 weeks for two visits per week, and then one to two times a month for 2 months. And per Dr. Heck, the patient's upper function was not a priority, and it was logical for respondents to focus on the lower extremities as opposed to the upper extremities. Regarding the progress notes, the respondent testified that he prepared notes at each office visit, and the patient in the investigative report during her interview indicated at the last visit the respondent was on his computer for 10 minutes during that particular office visit. Basically, there was a 12-day period between the time the notes were first started until they were completed. We provided the drafts of each of the progress notes to the board, and there is nothing in there that's significant in terms of adding treatments or doing anything that one would question whether or not those treatments were actually performed. And I do not believe that was ever been an allegation that he included things in the progress notes that weren't done. Given the fact that the board had all the drafts and they could compare what the respondent changed at the final draft, a lot of it was just putting his signature there. There were a few errors in terms of what he completed in one note regarding the last visit, which he finished that sentence, and it was clear that what he had included in there was consistent with the prior notes. And when you read the Arizona statutes and the administrative code, there is no specific time frame for completing these notes, and we respectfully submit that an approximately 12-day period is not unusual or lengthy, and that it is a reasonable time frame. Regarding the, the treatment that was provided, as I said earlier, that the treatment that Dr. Flanagan prescribed, first of all, did not harm the patient and did address the issues regarding her fatigue and her other issues regarding the GBS. At the initial evaluation, respondent documented performing a neurological screen of KR's upper extremity, including the cranial nerve testing, myotomes, dermatomes, DTRs, Hoffman, tonus, dysmetria, and a word I cannot pronounce. But it's on page 9 of our response at line 16. Therefore, the allegation that respondent's treatment did not properly treat her complaints, we respectfully submit, based again in part on Dr. Heck's standard care opinions, did adequately treat what he identified as her conditions. Dr. Heck also indicated that the respondent properly documented his findings, and that it was within the standard of care to get the notes done within the 12-day time period. Basically, what we're asking the board to do is to consider all of these factors that I've laid out here, looking at their request for rehearing or review. I do want to mention that Dr. Bastillo at the informal hearing indicated that she rarely gives out home exercise program instructions on the first day, which in this case would be February 25th, because she wants to evaluate how the first treatment went with the patient. So basically, we're looking at a 10-day period from March 2nd, March 4th, and March 9th. On March 9th, the patient did receive the home exercise program instructions. So we're basically talking about two visits, March 2nd and March 4th. And I would like to point out to the board, in the progress notes, a respondent does indicate that KR was doing some home exercises at home, not doing the complete home exercise program, because she was waiting for the respondent to send those instructions to her, which again, he did on March 9th. Becker Bastillo also confirmed that she had looked at the PhysiTrack app and indicated that it was way too complicated for her, so she went and used another program. And in this case, the respondent did go to a seminar regarding the PhysiTrack app, because first of all, that was one way they could upload the app by attending that program. So the respondent reasonably believed that the he could use the PhysiTrack application, and unfortunately, I think respondent said that technology caught up with him and he couldn't figure out all the bugs in it prior to the respondent's last appointment on March 9th. Based upon the foregoing, we respectfully ask the board to review this case and consider the lack of evidence really regarding any kind of ethical violation by the respondent, and the inconsistencies in the patient's testimony regarding allegedly being touched inappropriately by the respondent. Therefore, we ask the board that to rethink the decision to place the respondent on probation for 6 months, to order continuing education and a jurisprudence order, a $300 civil penalty. And as these are very punitive, punitive disciplines, which we don't believe, for the reason I've stated here, are necessary. And so we respectfully ask the board to grant our motion for rehearing or review. Thank you very much.
You're on mute.
You're on mute. I can't hear you.
There we go. The board has heard arguments from Mr. Flanagan and his attorney. We've reviewed the record in this matter. The board may grant a rehearing, which means that the whole case or a specified portion is reheard by the board, or the board may review, which means that the board may modify its earlier decision based on grounds established by the party requesting the review. The board can also deny the request and affirm its decision. If the motion is to grant rehearing or review, the maker of the motion must specify the grounds on which the rehearing or review is based. rehearing or review would then be limited to the specified grounds. Do I have a motion?
This is Mr. Greer. I have reviewed the entire motion. I've read the transcript from the prior hearing. I've looked at all of the exhibits attached to the motion. I don't see any error made by the board with respect to the rulings that we reached. With regard to the credibility issues, I recall the discussion with the respondent and the complainant, and I think we correctly judged the credibility issues. And I would move to deny the motion to rehear.
Is there a second?
King, second for discussion.
Okay, so we have a motion to deny, and we have a second. So, discussion.
Dr. Cornwell, members of the board, before there's an actual vote, if you could come back to me after the discussion, I'd appreciate it.
Okay. All right. We will do that. All right. Discussion about the motion. Dr. King, you had the second. What are your thoughts on this?
Similar to Josh, I went back and I read the transcript. I went through all of the evidence again, read the documentation, reviewed both of the testimony of Dr. Flanagan as well as that patient. And I was unable to find any discrepancy or an appropriate behavior from the board. So I'm having a difficult time finding the grounds for a rehearing.
Thank you. I would like to hear from just about everybody on the board. So, Mr. Leone, what's your thoughts?
Similar to Mr. Greer and Dr. King, I went through, the transcript that we had from the last hearing, went through all the documents again. It sounds like Mr. King was bringing up, the accusation of inappropriate touching and things of that nature. But as I recall, and it was confirmed after listening to the transcript, we didn't put anything in the order regarding the, sexual misconduct or anything like that. We kept it strictly to substandard care and inadequate patient records. So again, I'm not necessarily seeing anything that, I would say was inappropriate on the board's behalf.
Mr. Barton.
Yeah, so I've spent, I obviously wasn't at the original hearing, so I got the privilege of reviewing all of this information over the last several days. And, it seems to me that, what the respondents here are really complaining of is that the board, as they assess this, didn't find their expert witness and the respondent particularly credible. And I think the board is well within its rights to make that determination. What I see in the hearing and also even in respondents' motion are a lot of contested facts that need to be resolved by the board. And I don't see a lot of evidence. Well, I don't see any evidence as I read through this that any of those contested facts were unrebutted or that the board just chose to ignore any of those. I think there's pretty significant evidence on both sides. And so given that, I would agree with those who've spoken so far. It seems to me that there's not a basis to grant a rehearing on this matter. And my inclination is to deny as well based on that.
Thank you. Karen.
I would agree with Giovanni's comment on what we came down to with in terms of the disciplinary order. I feel like some of the other areas, like the consent and things like that, were taken out of it. So I do agree with the motion and to deny a rehearing.
Do members of the board feel like they have sufficient information to vote? I won't call a vote right now because we're going to go back to Mr. Harris. But I want to make sure that all the board members have what they need.
I have one question for Mr. Harris, if that would be appropriate.
I think so. Go ahead.
Okay. Josh, is it something that we should do in executive session or?
No, I don't think so. It's more procedural. So, Mr. Harris, is it appropriate for us to ask questions of the respondent? Can we do that?
You can. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I thought I was on mute. You can. However, typically, this is their motion, you know, for rehearing or review. We have specific questions related to the motion, perhaps, but not necessarily to the underlying, you know, information.
The underlying facts.
So it's, yeah.
Okay. So with that, Mr. Cornwall, I think my inclination would be, given where we're all kind of leaning, I'd like to ask the respondent and counsel for the respondent kind of what they think the biggest factual error that the board made was. And I'd like to give them a chance to respond to that and maybe show us what they think we're missing here.
Okay. So, Mr. Flanagan, Mr. King, do you think you can come in down to what is the major? Your motion you gave us included a step by step. I think there was 11 or more. So can you boil it down to what?
Yeah. Can I say something real quick?
Go ahead.
I'd love to address this. I mean, it comes down to y'all saying there's a credibility issue, and I'm really confused as to where my credibility isn't coming through this. I have been very forthcoming and bringing documentation on what I exactly did at each visit. I said that I asked the patient about videotaping her and educated her about it, and she gives three different stories to three different people. She says, he told me it was for my progress. She told me it was for this app that I talked about during the session. And then she told one other person that he didn't even tell me about it, and I didn't hear about it till afterwards. Like, I had a clear conversation with her about it, and it was very evident for me during that. I had a conversation about her, like, I'm going to touch you, and we are doing this. And she says in one place, he touched me at my girdle, and then in another place, it's two hands under my pants, and another, it's one hand under my pants. Like, her testimony on what happened, I don't know why she went where she went, but, like, I was very clear with her, and I documented every visit with clarity. I did a neural exam that first visit and documented it. I did it by exclusion, which that's probably the biggest area of my documentation that I can change that would make it easier for you. But I documented a neural exam on the first visit, did not give her exercise. She wanted facial exercises that visit. I didn't give them to her that visit because I wanted to see how she followed up. Her third, I'm doing another exam on emerging conditions. I didn't do a deeper neurological exam. I went from, okay, here's a neurological nociceptive centralized patient, and in a third visit, we got emerging condition, and I did a segmental evaluation looking at nociceptive versus peripheral nociopathic or plastic, not to be the same as peripheral neuropathy, and to determine which one is it. It's like, is this an emerging thing that I need to get her to somebody else? She had a complete change in her presentation in the third visit. For me to give her the same exercises as that time, it would have been inappropriate with it. I tried to get her exercises that day with her facial exercises, but it didn't go through on the app. The third time she comes in, we have a clear conversation around it, and it works as designed that third time. I don't, like, I'm really confused. What rules did I break or did I violate? And then where's my lack of credibility in this? Like, I treated this patient like she went from hospitalization to back to work in a few months. Like, she had a great outcome when it comes to GBS. Like, there's like my documentation. If you don't understand my documentation, I would love to clarify it. But when I look at my documentation and then I look at what Dr. Hayek, where's Dr. Hayek's credibility missing in all of this? Like, I go from a Maitland clinical reasoning model and SINS, and it guides my treatment. Like, my notes guide my treatment. I looked, it was a nociceptive presentation on that third visit, and I treated the CTJ and the SIJ, and it's documented, like, clearly. Like, where is there any place that I have not met the standard of care in this with it? So I have a hard time with this credibility issue. Like, I've worked with FSBPT, I've worked with the federal board or with the state board, and even with this board and the association. Like, for you say I have no credibility and Dr. Hayek has no credibility, I'm having a hard time with that. Like, I set the standard for 13 therapists in a documentation, and they document in a similar fashion. Like, I would love to know, like, what did we miss that we need to change internally? This is near and dear to me. Like, I do a lot of marriage ministry. I counsel people with adopted kids. I counsel mothers with single parents or with single moms. And right now I'm going through an adoption for my sister who passed away and suffered from an alcoholic husband. So this is near and dear to me. My wife suffered from sexual abuse when she was young. And when I told her the fact, she's like, she offered to meet with this person. Like, there's things going on in this that don't preclude. Like, I did, I need to know, like, what did I do wrong and what did I miss on this? Because I don't see it. Like, I have nothing to hide, and my notes can't hide anything, but they can't hide anything that would be inappropriate. So I struggle with that aspect of this. Like, I'm okay. Like, I missed some of the from the trauma course. I missed some of her sensitivity to being in a room and some of her language. And like, but her testimony, my testimony are almost the same, except she says she can read my mind. And I'm saying I couldn't read hers, but I asked her for follow up on every one of those visits. And she didn't want, she even admits, I didn't tell him what I was thinking. Like, I love our profession. I love what we do, and I do tons of mentoring, and I do our residency, and my clinical reasoning comes from our residency model we've been doing for years. And like, I'm passionate about this, but I don't see where my credibility, like, where I don't see it. If it's there, then I'm okay admitting where I'm wrong. Documentation, I could have done better. I could have definitely seen this patient in an aspect of noticing her body language and noticing her short words and noticing that she had that the closure of being in a single room. You look at both of her testimonies in that she liked being in the open environment versus a single room. Worked all my life not to have to do that open environment thing. Like, I don't see where the credibility issue is here. Like, where's the evidence that, like, I lied or said something wrong or didn't give her what I felt was the best practice for her? Like, you have to believe I lied. And I'm like, I have a really hard time with that.
Mr. Barton, does that help you at all?
Yeah. I mean, I think I understand what the respondent is saying for sure. So yes, I would say that. Thank you, Mr. Flanagan, for that response, and that does give me an idea of where you are and what your concerns are.
And Mr. Barton, if I may, in response to your question.
Sure.
Again, in finding fact number 10, it states that we did not obtain consent. Well, we have documentary proof that we did obtain a written consent for treatment. And again, in each progress note, a respondent said he obtained verbal consent during each office visit. And again, with regard to the skin-to-skin contact, the respondent testified at the informal hearing that he did not touch her patient's buttocks region and did not have any inappropriate contact. And this last finding of fact number 9 regarding the medical records and finishing them after he received the complaint. Again, we provided all the drafts of the medical records, so you could see what the respondent added approximately 12 days later or so after the treatment. And it's minor information. There's nothing significant in there that's changing what he said he did or anything like that. So this isn't, I mean, the implication is that he put stuff in there that he didn't put earlier in order to cover his bases. And there's no indication of that. You have the actual records to look at and to say, well, he didn't add any significance. So those are the two primary areas.
All right. Dr. Leon said that everything was all about documentation and standard of care. I struggle with the standard of care. I'm okay with the documentation. But in 10, it says that I'm agreeing that I inappropriately touched her skin in the buttocks region. Like, that goes totally against my testimony. It goes totally against what happened in there. I did zero soft tissue mobilization. It wasn't even indicated for this patient. I have frustration around this. When I look at the investigative report, it says I didn't ask about tramadol. That's in my notes. It says that I said that she needed an expert care to continue. Like, that was totally taken out of context and changed and influencing the board when, like, that sentence, when you read it, says I referred her to an expert, but that she needs skilled therapy. But the sentence there was highlighted for you guys and said you I'd have to read it, but like, it was misrepresented. It was taken completely out of context in my notes, completely. And Dr. King talked about this gradients of power that's in a room with a patient, and it's the same thing on this board. Like, I have to overcome so many things from that initial evat or the initial con or the investigator report that there's no evidence to support those things. Like, tramadol's in there. Like, I didn't say she needed expert care. I said I referred her to an expert and that she needed continued care. And the next sentence is, Dr. Sean doesn't have expert care. Like, there's frustration in how that came out and across to you guys, because I have a huge mountain to overcome in this. And it's not even supported by the notes. I asked for consent. I put it in my notes, and then I'm in the board and I'm told let's he didn't put it in his notes. Like, it's a rule, it's a requirement. I have to put it in my notes. Every one of our PTs from the very beginning knows you ask for that and you have to put it in there. So, I mean, I'm sorry I'm passionate about it, but like, this impacts me way outside of physical therapy when I'm trying to adopt somebody, and when my ministry and my give back is to those that are hurting in marriage and those that are adoption and everything. So there's a lot more at risk for me just to around this. And there's just not I don't see the evidence.
And last, I'd say too, regarding the inappropriate touching allegation, I respectfully submit that no reasonable person could sit there or lie down for 10 minutes, have the respondent touch her buttocks with both hands and grind his hips against the table for 10 minutes and believe in any way, shape, or form that is somehow part of the treatment process, and that a patient would give a respondent the benefit of the doubt in returning for a fourth visit. That's incredible to me, quite frankly. Nobody would do that. So thank you.
You're muted, Dr. Cornwell.
All right, any other comments or questions that board members have? All right, you ready for the question?
Dr. Harris, I mean, Dr. Cornwell, I think Mr. Harris wanted to be heard.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm, thank you.
All right. Dr. Plummer, members of the board, thank you. First, if at any time you want to go into executive session for legal advice on any questions that you may have regarding the motion for rehearing or review prior to taking your vote, I'd be more than happy to try to answer any questions. What I also wanted to address, and this goes to Mr. Barton, and Mr. Barton, I very much appreciated your comments and the introductory comments in particular regarding the prep that you did for this. I was wondering if you could just elaborate, since you weren't there for the initial, for the informal hearing, if you could just share with us the fact that you did go back and review all of the materials that were presented to the board at that informal hearing, as well as listen to the proceedings. That's why you feel comfortable participating on this in this matter today.
You're muted, Josh.
It Thank helps you. If I have my microphone on. That's correct, Mr. Harris. So prior to this rehearing argument that we're having here today, I actually went through and reviewed the complaint, the documentation associated with the investigation, listened to the informal hearing, and looked at all of the documents related to that, and also the motion and the documents related to that. So I have seen everything that the board considered in the original informal hearing, as well as the motion for rehearing that we are discussing here today, and have reviewed all of that and spent a long time getting up to date on this particular matter.
Thank you so much.
Just a matter of information, not information, but inquiry. Any board member like to go into executive session for legal advice? Okay. All right. So are we ready to vote? All right. Judy?
Case number 2108, Sean Flanagan, PT, with the motion for a request for rehearing or review. The motion before you has been moved and seconded to deny the request for rehearing or review. Dr. Cornwell.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo.
No.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
No.
Mr. Barton. Mr. Barton.
Sorry. Yes.
Motion passes.
Okay. All right. Thank you to everyone who's participated. Mr. King and Mr. Flanagan, if you have questions, the staff will be happy to try to answer them for you.
Thank you, Dr. Cornwell.
Do you have questions?
I don't have any questions.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's move to item 10 on the agenda. Superior Court case number CV 2021-091960, Jane Roe versus Arizona State Board of Physical Therapy. And I think, yes, Dan's still here. So I make a motion that we go into executive session for legal advice.
I'll second that.
Okay. All right. All those. Let's see. Go ahead. Roll the call.
It's been moved and seconded to go into executive session for legal advice. Dr. Cornwell.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo.
Yeah.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
We will stop recording in this meeting and move into executive session. The board will be back following executive session to continue this meeting.
And Judy, Dan has the link to that?
Yes, he does.
All right.
Yes. The recording will stop at 11:10 a.m.